the first question is to describe your evolution as a teacher of diversity and social justice.
Well, I think that the first thing that I taught, because I've been teaching for a long time in a lot of different settings, the first thing I taught was I taught swimming at a local recreation center when I was 13 or 14. It was near my house, and it was at a school for the deaf. So I met a lot of deaf children by going in, and it was just a regular community center, but they had a large pool, which meant that I had a couple of deaf kids in my swimming class, and so then I started to get curious about the school and ended up volunteering in the residence hall. This was a boarding school for deaf kids, and it was what they would call an oralist school, so they made profoundly deaf children try to learn how to speak, which, from where I stand now, is not a particularly socially just practice. Mm-hmm. But these were kids I saw in my neighborhood all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I volunteered in the residence hall and got to see the kids interacting in more sort of informal social settings, and got to know their residence counselor, the person who lived with them, who was a deaf woman, but I didn't even figure out she was deaf until I'd worked there for several weeks. She could totally pass as a hearing person because she had lost her hearing after learning how to speak. So it, at a pretty young age, because of some of the teaching that I was interested in doing, I started to realize that there were political issues around language and inclusion and culture and what some people would describe as disability. I think most deaf people don't consider themselves disabled, but that was something that happened early on. And then when I was in my senior year of high school, I did an internship at a school for kids with learning disabilities near my school. Everybody sort of had like an internship that they did. And I got to work with a really gifted teacher, so I really got to see someone who was working with kids that had a range of learning disabilities, and actually there were some... The private school, there were some kids who had been placed there who actually did not have learning disabilities. They had cognitive and psychological disabilities, things like autism and I don't know what you would diagnose it as, but the parents had enough money to put them in this school because they knew their kids needed a lot of one-on-one attention. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of my experiences teaching were with groups that were sort of designated as special needs. And so anytime you're looking at, you know, when people need something different than somebody else, the question is, well, either how do you give it to them, or look at why is it that somebody might not be getting what they need in society. So later on, after I graduated from college and came out here, I eventually became a member of Axis Dance Company, which is what's called a mixed ability dance company. And I got to work with people with and without disabilities and learned a lot. And I also worked, at the same time I worked at a nonprofit, with a lot of really powerful people with disabilities who had helped to pass the ADA. And so it really made me start to think that the question was being asked the wrong way. You know, how do we create an inclusive society instead of how do we hurry up and try to make up for the fact that these people have a deficit? Like, you can look at a deficit as an individual person's problem, or you can look at it as a problem with the society. So I think that a lot of that is what got me to start looking at issues differently as an educator and as an artist. And I also taught for Axis Dance Company as well, youth. And when I was in college, I also was very active in the women's anti-violence movement. So I was a rape crisis counselor, and I followed a dance company out here that was a women's political dance collective, because I was really interested in doing something more political with dance than just making pretty things. And so that's what got me out here, and this was a long time ago, this was like 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. The art scene was very political then. I think it's becoming political now for very different reasons, more because of the sort of income disparity that's going on in the Bay Area, but at the time in the 80s, I think this was just a really fluid place artistically in terms of culture and identity, and there were just a lot of interesting things going on in the theater and dance world. So I got involved in, through the dancing that I was doing, I got involved in a women's martial arts school. So So anyway, that's kind of how I ended up doing what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like what I do here is really an extension of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something, it's not a detour. It's about offering dance as a, like martial arts, a form of mind-body-spirit integration.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have a small program, at least with the majors, I'm able to really help students find their own voice as artists, and a lot of that has to do with looking at their own backgrounds and their own experiences and contextualizing them, and, as well as just some of the actual content of the courses that I teach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like movement analysis, or I teach a cluster course for first-year students that's basically an overview of world dance, and it's in a cluster that has a world music and world religions course. So when I'm teaching that course, it's an opportunity to look at physical culture and attitudes towards the body as a reflection of, you know, colonial history and technology and, you know, migration patterns, and as well as religious and spiritual outlook.
Mm-hmm.